Good evening. My name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Steve, thanks for inviting me over, just so you all know. My home group is at 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights in Great Bridge. It's the Great Bridge Step Study, which Steve was gracious enough over the past couple of months to help us out and have group home group members from your home group come over and share with us. So, Steve, thanks for doing that for us. I do have to apologize. I've been scheduled to be here, I think, probably three or four different times, and for whatever reason, my schedule just has not allowed, or we've double booked, or whatever the case might be. But at any rate, I'm glad to be here. My sobriety date is December 21st, 2012. Just to back up a little bit, it's been a while since I've spoke at a meeting, which is kind of a unique situation, because I go through spurts where I'll speak for a while, and then I won't speak again for a little bit. And just so happens to be right now where I'm at in my life, I've just merged families, so I've moved into a new home with my girlfriend and her kids. I'm switching jobs, she's switching jobs. I'm going through some pretty heavy stuff from my last job. Some ugly accusations have been made that aren't true, which I can honestly say to you all now, maybe not before 2012, but I can honestly tell you that it's been pretty ugly. So it's unique that... Well, it's a blessing, I guess, is the best way to say it, that this has been put into my life, that now I get to come and speak, because it's been a while. And it seems like whenever I'm in need, somehow it pops up and I'm able to really get myself wrapped up in AA, and that's really a solution for me. I can tell you, over the years, the way that I've spoke at meetings has changed. In early sobriety, I spoke mostly all about alcoholism and what it looked like for me. As I spend more time in Alcoholics Anonymous, my story changes a little bit. I do tell you about what happened because I think it's important that I identify to you that I'm an alcoholic, and if you're a newcomer in here, you can identify with what I'm telling you. But I spend more time now on the solution and what I do to stay sober and have a spiritual life today, because that's not who I was when I first got here. Back up, I guess... It started when I was about 12 years old. That's normally about the age that I hear from a lot of folks when they speak. About 12 years old is when I had my first drink. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. I was used to the families having parties and people being around all the time. And I remember playing bartender as a kid, very young, and watching all the adults drink and thinking, man, they're having a blast, and thinking, that's what I want. That's what I want, you know? So when I was 12, I'd had a sip of beer here and there before, and I thought, oh, that's just, this, you know, oh, I don't even know how the adults are doing that. But for some reason, when I was 12, I decided that I want, and I remember the name of it, and you probably never even heard of this, but Wiedemann's beer is what it was. It was a Northern Michigan type of a beer, and I remember my grandfather had it in a old refrigerator in the garage, and I decided that I was going to drink one that day with a couple of friends that were over. And I remember drinking that, and it just being the most freeing thing I've ever felt in my life. I became somebody who I wanted to be, which was just loose and being able to talk and be charismatic and all of the things that you hear other people that speak say, you know, those things came true for me. I wound up throwing up that night and feeling like crap the next day, like just trash the next day. And I remember my first thought was, man, I can't wait to do that again. Like, that was it. I can't wait to do it again. And that's pretty much how it was through my whole drinking career, now that I think about it. So from 12 on, I got into high school then and started going out with the crowd that I could find that would party on the weekends. We would go out maybe one night and we would party. I got my driver's license. I got a little bit of freedom. I'm 16 years old. I'm working at a Kroger. I steal a bunch of beer and stuff, put it out the back door, pick it up. I'm driving down the road. We have open alcohol in the car. A car comes at me. I pulled out in front of it. I smashed through a guy's fence. We take all the alcohol and throw it, and it was a good time. I was there to fix the fence the next day. Never got a DUI or anything like that then. It was just a part of my life. It was just who I was at an early age. I could not wait to party and do that again. That was just my thought process. So from there, around the age of 16 to 17, you know, I was doing it on the weekends, but, you know, we would meet in the morning and I'd go to this guy's house. And I remember his parents had a open cabinet, you know, of alcohol, and we would just drink in the morning before we would go to school. And it got worse then, even in high school. You know, as often as I could possibly get it, I would drink. Anything to alter my change my way of thinking or the way that I thought I was in my head, I did it. You know, if it was going to a football game, going to a dance, whatever, I wanted to drink. And I knew it was happening, but I didn't really know what it was until later in my life. But when I drank, something changed. When I took that first drink, all bets were off. I could not stop. When I got the first one, I couldn't get enough. And I'll probably highlight that several times throughout my story. But when I drank, I could never stop. You know, I'd pick up the first one and all bets were off. Sometimes I was a great guy and had a lot of fun. Sometimes I'd black out and ruin a whole entire party or go to, you know, get in a fight and with somebody that I probably shouldn't, that didn't even know me, just because that's who I was when I drank. So I had my first court run in. I was supposed to be in school. I skipped school. I ran a bus off the road. Had to go to court for that. I was drinking, of course. Didn't get a DUI, but the bus driver saw me and turned me in. Had to do community service for that. I got out of it, you know, which is kind of the story of my life for a while. I got out of it. And of course I said, you know what, I'm just not gonna do that ever again. You know what I mean? During the day, that's probably not a good idea. I'm not gonna do it. And I stuck to that for a while. My senior year of high school, I was the captain of the soccer team. I somehow managed to still get good grades. I still managed to have the girlfriend. I still managed to be the captain of the soccer team. I still managed to play on the baseball team, all of those things. Meanwhile, I'm drinking like a fish every chance that I get, every opportunity that I get. I skipped school on the day of a regional tournament, and my whole high school team lost their championship because I was ineligible to play, and I still played that night. I drank all day, and then I played soccer that night, and the team lost their championship because of myself. And I justified that and said, you know, oh, that's BS. I was there for the allotted amount of time that I needed to be there. But it was just another excuse to do what I wanted to do, and that's exactly what I was doing. I graduated high school, I moved with my family, started going to community college, went for 2 years, just couldn't cut it because I was just drinking and partying. You know, I was doing what I wanted to do. My parents didn't like it, they were giving me a hard time, so like any good alcoholic, I just figured, well, time to move out so that I can go drink like I want to drink. And that's pretty much the story of my life, is I wanted to drink like I wanted to drink, and I didn't want you to tell me that I couldn't. So I changed. I changed geographical areas. I changed where I was living with my family. Decided that I wanted to move into an apartment by myself. Just moved in, started drinking and drugging, and I don't know. I guess I just forgot to start paying rent, or you know, and just kind of did whatever I wanted. At the time, I guess I was probably about 4 months behind in rent. I was selling marijuana just as fast as I could to try to pay for my use of alcohol and drugs. And my parents came over and they said, that's it. They're like, we're turning you into the cops or you're going in the military. You're either going to go to jail or you're going in the military and you're learning some discipline. And of course, you know, I took the easier, softer way. And I said, well, you know, all right, I'll join the military. And I did that. I didn't drink during boot camp, obviously, and I was fine, you know. I did relatively well. I got out of boot camp, went to school, was fine, got on my first ship, and got to my first port, and I couldn't wait to get a drink. And I was off to the races again. I got shipped to San Diego, spent most of my time down in Tijuana drinking as much as I possibly could. The tequila was good and cheap down there. I got busted in the military. I was drinking tequila, and one night rode the train back and forth to Tijuana about 8 times, wound up face down in the officers club rocks. That was my first mandatory, trip to, back then they called it like an alcohol awareness program. And you basically had to complete it and just go through, they would tell you what you were doing. You had to go to a meeting, and I went into a meeting, there was a bunch of old people there, and they were talking about God and whatever, and I didn't want to hear that. So I did what I had to do to get through it. I got shipped back over to Norfolk, and lo and behold, again, I got in trouble with alcohol. I wound up in the program again here. This is back when, I mean, it was prevalent to get in trouble with alcohol. It was kind of a normal thing in the military, I guess, at that time. I did what I had to do to get through what they wanted me to do to get through it. I got married, and my alcoholism kind of really started to run my life. I didn't really worry about what people were doing. I didn't worry about the consequences anymore. As soon as I had that first drink, all bets were off and I was doing what I wanted to do. I wound up getting out of the service, and I did, believe it or not, I got my Good Service Conduct Award the day that I got out, which is weird because I guess I probably never really should have got it since I got in so much trouble while I was there. But I never got demoted or anything like that, so they still gave it to me. I got out of the military and I went in an apprenticeship program where I excelled. I was drinking on the weekends, but I found myself setting myself up to do stuff to be able to drink. In other words, I played a lot of golf and I did a lot of fishing because I knew that both of those things I could drink during, you know. I would go out on a Saturday and golf, and I remember my wife at the time being like, please don't come home like that again, you know, and like, how dare you? You know, I remember that thought in my mind, how dare you? This is my time. I've worked hard all week. I deserve the weekend, you know. I deserve to go out and have my drinks. And when I go out there, I would go out there with guys who drank like I did, you know. So I didn't look weird, you know. I didn't stand out. It was kind of a normal thing. And then we'd go back to the house and we'd have a barbecue or whatever after, and the party would continue. And then I'd want to do it over again on Sunday, but the guys that I was hanging out with on Saturday, they were wore out. So I had to find new people to do it with on Sunday. So I had like two groups of friends that I was hanging out with, cause they just couldn't keep up. And, so I started having, what I referred to as incidences. They were like nuances that would happen. I was in Tennessee with my family. I was drinking. And I didn't like my new brother-in-law, so I got in a fight with him, but it was his fault. You know, I got arrested that night. I didn't talk to my family for about 3 or 4 months over that one. You know, my wife and I, we had several knockdown dragouts. You know, I was not a good person with her. We weren't good with each other. Most of it was due to my drinking, which is, you know, I talk about it now, but back then looking at it, it was a pretty bad situation. But at any rate, you know, we started having incidents, you know, and they started getting closer and closer together. I found that I started doing things like drinking a six pack on the weekdays and limiting myself to a six pack on the weeknights. You know what I mean? Weeknight, you know, during the week when I had to work. I'd say, okay, it's a Tuesday night, I'm gonna drink, but I'm only gonna buy a six pack. That's all I'm gonna drink. No liquor during the week, you know? That's off limits. And I noticed that those things started slipping. Like I would say, I'm only gonna have a six pack. Well, then I'd drink that six pack and I'd say, well, six more isn't gonna hurt anything, right? And I started getting a hard time from my wife, so what I would do is I would go to the store and I would buy a six pack for the refrigerator for everybody to see. And then I buy a 12 pack that I could put in my garage somewhere that nobody would be able to see them, right? That way I could slip out, pound one away, go back inside and show that I'm drinking like a normal person inside, right? Of course, I was the smartest guy. I was fooling everybody doing that. Lo and behold, my whole garage is filling up with beer bottles. You know what I mean? They're everywhere. And I'll share a little bit about that in a little bit, but you know, I'm hiding it, you know? And I'm noticing that I'm starting to, it's rapidly increasing, you know? It's no longer just during the weekend, or the weekend, it's really starting to filter into the week. I finished my apprenticeship program, top of my class. I'm running work for a company. I'm holding it all together. I have my first child. You know, because what's a good alcoholic do when stuff's screwed up? We are going to fix it with something else. And I introduce a baby into the world. You know, that's what I did. So we had our son, and things are progressively getting worse. And I figure, well, it's the job. I'm working construction. I need something else. So I get a different job that's a management job. And lo and behold, it's at my own office where I make my own hours and my own rules. I decide when I'm going to come and go. And I decide, you know, I have people that work for me now, and they can do the jobs that I need them to do. And all I have to do is manage them in the morning for a little bit. So I start doing that job. And one of the perks is I get to travel a lot. So I'm taking every trip I can possibly get my hands on, because my drinking is now way out of control, and I can't hide it anymore. So my fix is I'm going out of town as much as possible so that I can go away and drink how I want to drink. Meanwhile, I'm going to these meetings and I'm missing work meetings because I'm drinking, or I'm leaving those meetings early because I want to go drink how I want to drink, and this stuff's starting to get in the way of my alcohol. Luckily, I held on to that job for a long time, but you know, in a lot of ways, I was in a position to do what I wanted to do, and I had the keys to the kingdom to do it. You know, I had an open expense account. You know, I had plenty of business trips. I started doing whatever I wanted to do. My wife wasn't happy with me anymore, so it was her fault. You know, I admit this freely now, and she and I made amends for it, but, you know, I had extramarital affairs. I did whatever I wanted to do when I went out of town. And then I started doing them at home, you know. I can remember vividly, the incidences were starting to become closer and closer together. I'm doing stuff like passing out behind the wheel in the Target parking lot in Greenbrier and running into the car in front of me and giving the guy $1,000 so that he wouldn't call the cops right there on the spot. That's who I've become now. You know, I'm going out drinking at night with different groups of people just so that I don't have to go home. Oh, by the way, I'm still a father here. I'm supposed to be coaching my son's baseball team, and they don't know whether I'm going to show up or not. You know, I have an assistant coach who's being there for me because I can't be there, period. You know, and I'm blaming it on the baseball team. You know, the kids, the parents, they suck. You know, screw those people. I don't need to be around them. You know, that's who I'm becoming. I'm sleeping on the couch. I'm drinking every day now. By about noon, I'm like, I gotta have a drink, and I'm going to the bar and I'm drinking, and I'm doing most of my job sitting on a bar stool, you know, at the local pub. That's where I'm working from. I've got my notebook there. I've got my office laid out. All the bartenders know my name. They know what I'm drinking. I'm drinking beer and finishing off with vodka. I'm getting in the car and I'm driving myself home every single night, not caring for anybody or anything that's going on around me. So, because I want to get to the other part, the good part, which is the recovery, and I'll tell you quickly what happened. Alcohol was starting to not work anymore. I'm drinking vodka at 7 o'clock in the morning just to keep my hands from shaking now. I'm puking pretty regularly, you know. It's just a normal thing for me to throw up and just keep drinking now. I'm about 245 pounds. I'm yellow. You know, my eyes are bloodshot and yellow. I still have a passport picture from when I, at like 2011, right before I quit. That's my passport picture. Which is awesome because I get to go back and look at it. But I'm looking pretty bad, and I'm drinking regularly, and I'm doing whatever I want to do. The alcohol is not working, though. So I started doing a whole lot of other stuff. And I remember, and I'll share this with you because you will understand where I'm coming from. I'm in a local pub, and I mean, it is a hole-in-the-wall bar. And I'm sitting in the bathroom, and I'm looking in the mirror, and I can't look in the mirror. And I'm smoking weed out of this guy's one hitter because the alcohol just isn't working for me anymore. And I remember thinking, what am I doing? You know? And that was the only thought I had. I walked out of there and went right back to sitting on the bar stool next to the guy drinking and saying, thanks, I appreciate that, you know? I'm stealing pills from a guy at my office. He's got a knee injury, but he's got Percocet and Vicodin, and he leaves them in his desk that I have keys to. Thank you. So I'm taking all of that. I'm taking probably 4 to 12 Vicodin a day, maybe a handful of Percocets if I can get my hands on them, plus drinking. I'm having incidences left and right. In November, I get arrested for drunk in public. I wasn't walking, I was walking out of a bar, and there was one of those cars that do the taxes, you know, they have the cameras on it or whatever, and who knew there was a cop in there doing that? I didn't. I found out that it was, but who knew it was a cop? You know, they drive through and they do your license plate, and if you don't pay your taxes, they hit you with a ticket. I didn't know there was a cop. So I decided I needed to go to the bathroom, so I urinated in the parking lot. And they called the other cop over. He came over and he said, hey, you know, have you been doing this? And of course, I'm inebriated. I can barely talk. I just fell in the bar. That's why they made me leave. You know, I didn't want to be out public or whatever. And so the cop says, well, I need your license. Let me see your license. I said, I haven't done anything. And at that time, I called for a ride because I knew I couldn't drive that night. And that's how bad I was. And as a matter of fact, my buddy took my keys and the cop said, I want to see your license. And I held it like this and I said, do you want to see it by yourself? And he said, yeah, hand it to me. And I went like this and I closed my eyes and I said, see, you can see it by yourself. And evidently, he didn't think I was as funny as I thought I was at the moment, because he bounced my head off the car about 8 times. I had a knot on one side, a knot on the other side. And I remember when he specifically put me in the front seat of his car. And he slammed my head off the car door as I was going in. So I guess I wasn't really funny to him. Needless to say, I spent the night in jail. And it was the cop's fault. You know, it was his fault. December rolled around. You know, Christmas time's coming. And I'm drinking heavy. And I'm taking a lot of pills. I've talked a psychiatrist into giving me Ambien because I can't sleep at night. And I'm going to talk to him, and I'm having all these problems, you know, and I've already manipulated him into giving me what I want. So I've got pills from him, and I'm taking Ambien on a pretty regular basis, even just because it makes me so tired. I feel like I'm out of it. I feel like I'm, you know, not me, and that's what I'm really looking for. So I'm drinking and taking those, and I pass out in the 7-Eleven parking lot with the car and drive, and it goes across the parking lot and hits another car. My father-in-law at the time came and saved me, paid that guy off. That guy left. I didn't go to jail. They took me home. They got my car home that night. I don't know how. It was about a week later, December 20th it was. December 19th it was. December 19th, 2012. I had been drinking all day long. I'd thrown up twice. I was pretty sober for my standards. In other words, I knew what I was doing. I knew where I was at. I wasn't like blacked out or anything like that. I made a right out of the parking lot of my office. That's right. I said a right out of the parking lot of my office. Made a right. First light I come to, not even a half a block away. My cell phone drops. I lean over to get it and I hit the car in front of me. As normal, I try to talk my way out of it. That night, that evening, it was like 5:30. I wasn't getting out of it. I hit an undercover FBI agent. She was a female and she was pregnant and she was pissed. Excuse me. She was mad. And, right there for God and everybody, right in front of my office, all of the people that I work with driving by, I was being arrested. I spent that night in jail. I got out the next day. I was sitting at my desk the next day. I never went home. Went to my desk the next day, was drinking a six pack, and the guy that I work with looked at me and he goes, what is effing wrong with you? And I just looked at him and I thought, the audacity, you work for me. Are you kidding me? You know, what's wrong with you? And I left there that night, and I took about 12 Ambien that night because I couldn't drink anymore like I wanted to. I don't know whether I was trying to kill myself that night or not. I could only assume that I was, because nobody really ever would take 12 Ambien. But I did, and I passed out. The next day I woke up, and I don't know what was different. I can't tell you what was different, but for some reason that day it was different. I woke up, and I knew that I was either going to wind up in jail, I was going to wind up dead, or I was going to wind up in an institution. And I decided that morning, with my daughter sleeping next to me in my bed, because I had my daughter by then, I decided that I needed to go and check myself into a rehab because I couldn't do this anymore. I knew that if I continued doing what I was doing, I was gonna die. And I didn't know how to do it on my own. I didn't know how to stop drinking. I didn't know how to become a normal drinker. I didn't know any of that. I just thought I needed to go somewhere so that I could cut back. You know, my intentions were never to quit. Because here's the other part of my story is I had come to AA about 6 years prior to that, on and off, to get people off of my back. And I would come in here and I would sit in here and I would sit for the meeting, probably drunk when I was here. I can almost tell you I was drunk when I was here. And I would look at all of you and I'd look down my nose at you and you would talk about God and whatever. And that's the only thing that I would concentrate on. Not a solution, not any kind of advice from anybody. I would just judge you. And a lot of times I came here just because it got me out of the house and gave me an excuse to be able to go drink like I wanted to drink. And I would leave the meeting and I would go to the bar and drink. Lo and behold, little did I know, after December 21st, I would learn that I had a severe allergy to alcohol. And when put in my body, I can't get enough of it. So I checked myself into rehab, and it's a good thing that I did. After taking all the Zambien, I was pretty much starting to have signs of a heart attack. At the age of, 39, I was starting to have signs of a heart attack. So I spent the next 5 days, I got on Christmas Day to go home. This is kind of a weird part of my story, but nevertheless, it's still part of my story. That day when I got out of rehab, I spent December 25th at home with my wife and my kids. That next day, I packed my stuff and I never went back. That's just part of my story. That's just what I needed to do at the time. I spent the next 30 days in outpatient rehab. After I'd spent my time in the rehab itself, the inpatient, I saw what was called an addictionologist, and they started educating me about alcoholism. I was going to outpatient all day long, and then I was still going to meetings at night. And I think it was around December 28th or 29th, which was a Monday night. I went to a meeting in Norfolk, in downtown Norfolk, and I did something that I'd never done in my entire life before. And there was a funny Scottish guy talking, and he was telling me about how he had been sober for, 15 years, I think, at the time, around that. And I remember thinking, man, if that guy with that accent can get sober, surely I can too. You know, if he can not drink, there's got to be something to it. Maybe he, you know. So I did something that I'd never done before in my life, and I asked another human being for help, which is absolutely the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. So here I am. I'm not drinking. I want to drink every minute of every day. That's how I feel. That's really how I feel. Hopefully you can relate to that, because that's really the only way that I can explain it. I'm walking around through. I'm scared to go into a 7-Eleven. You know, I don't want to go into Target because I know that there's an alcohol aisle. Everywhere I go, there's alcohol and triggers that I'm wanting to drink bad. And I met this guy and I said, man, I need some help. I said, I'm going to drink again. Like, I know I'm going to drink again. And he said, well, I have some good news for you. You don't have to feel like that anymore. And so I'm going to warn you, because I get choked up at some of the parts in my story, only because I had to live this, and it was something very odd for me to do. I really thought step one was like the easiest step that I could ever take. But really looking back on it, step one was probably the hardest step I ever had to take. And admit that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. Because prior to me asking that guy for help, I thought I had it. And I thought I was going to strong arm this thing. I was not going to drink anymore. I was just going to take a break or come to meetings, and you all were going to teach me how to drink like a gentleman. You know, like some of us have the notion that we think that that's what's going to happen. I thought I was a pretty nice guy, to be honest with you, when I first got in the program. I thought I was a pretty nice guy. I just drank too much, you know, and this program was going to help me to not drink anymore. But I met my sponsor, and he said, you don't have to drink like that anymore. And he said, are you willing to go to any lengths you know, to do this. And of course, I just was like, yeah, oh yeah, you know what I mean? Because I don't know what else to say at this point. I know I'm gonna die, you know? I've been told by several people, you almost died now. If you drink again, you're going to die. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll do anything. So we sit down, and I'll never forget, he writes out this crazy list, right? And it's like some simple actions that I have to do, you know? I have to join a home group. What's that all about? I don't even know what a home group is, you know? But he's going to teach me. And so I joined his home group, you know? It's on Monday night. We start going to meetings together. I had to start calling other alcoholics, which is weird because I don't like to call anybody. I don't want to call you. I don't want to listen to how your day is because that distracts me from my day, you know? I have to say some simple prayers. That is insane to me. I don't understand that because when I got here, if there was a God, he was angry at me. You know, he was doing all this bad stuff to me. You guys were talking about God like crazy. Like every word I heard was God. I didn't realize that it doesn't have to be a God thing. You know, when you first get here, it's not about that. You know, if you choose to make it that way, you can have it that way. But if not, then to me, you know, he asked me, he said, can you just believe in something higher? There's a higher power than you. Is there something greater than you out there? I said, all right. And he said, well, if you say all right to that, then that's who you can pray to, you know? Don't think of it as like the God you learned in Catholic Church or whatever. Just think of it as a higher power and say some simple prayers. I'm like, all right, it sounds stupid, but I'll do it, right? And so he said, you got to start taking the steps. And, you know, the 12-step program freaked me out because, you know, I'd always heard about 12-step programs and, you know, and I see these, you know, all these commercials for the, what's the place in California, you know, at any rate, the 12-step programs. And I'm like, oh, this is like a cult. I'm like, but if it'll help me, you know, that's how desperate I am. I'm broken and I'm desperate. I just want a solution. So I'm like, all right, I'll start doing the steps with you. So long story short, I did the steps. And, you know, the whole time I'm calling my sponsor on a regular basis and we're having conversations and I'm confused because I don't understand why this person wants to freely give his time to me. You know, no one's ever given free time to me. You know, not in my world. I come from a world where we manipulate each other and we do what we need to do. We lie to each other to get what we want out of each other. And then once we get what we want, you're gone. That's kind of the world that I lived in. So this guy's like meeting me and spending time with me. We're meeting every Sunday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning at a coffee house. Half the time we're there before the people are there to make the coffee, you know, before they open up. And we're spending 2-3 hours together on Sunday mornings. I'm going through the steps with him. Obviously, we did them fast in the beginning because that's really what I needed at the time. But, you know, 2, 3, you know, I'm jumping through the steps and I'm calling other alcoholics and I'm starting to ask other people how they're doing, how their day is going and how they're feeling. And you know, something starts happening to me. The prayers start changing and they start actually meaning something, you know? I'm waking up in the morning and I'm suddenly, it's been like a day or two and I hadn't thought about drinking, you know? Which is weird for me because I didn't know how to go a minute without drinking. I didn't know how to go to a baseball game. I didn't know how to go to dinner and not have a drink, you know? Now I'm doing stuff like going to a home group dinner after the meeting on a Monday night at 9 o'clock and we're going and we're having pizza together and I'm sitting with 15 or 20 people and we're talking about how we're staying sober and we're talking about our drinking and we're bringing newcomers with us and we're starting to share the message with each other and my life is starting to change. But I do want to share this with you. My life is changing, but in no way, shape, or form did I get good. That wasn't promised to me. You know, that was not a part of this deal. I started not thinking about alcoholism, you know. I started not thinking about drinking anymore. I started spending a lot of time with the guys in the program. We shared a lot of things together. We talk about a lot of things. I'm starting to bounce things off of people and ask them before I act and do stuff. Because one of the things that I found is that I'm not a very good decision maker when it comes to my personal life. Business is one thing, you know, but when it comes to relationships, I'm not real good at that stuff. I just never have been. I don't make the best decisions sometimes. So it's important for me to call my sponsor and we talk about those things, or I talk to some of the other guys that I trust in the program. I'm starting to gain real friends. You know, I thought my friends were the people that I hung out with on the bar stools. But they come and go, you know. When they got what they wanted, they did the same thing I did, which was moved on. Now I've got guys that I'm talking to on a daily basis where I'm doing stuff with their families and their families are doing stuff with my family. And, you know, I can tell you this though, bad decisions start becoming harder and harder for me to make, you know, because at the core of it, I'm selfish, self-centered. I lie, I cheat, and I manipulate, and I will steal everything you have as an alcoholic. When I'm starting to do the steps and I'm starting to get sober, those decisions are becoming harder and harder to make. You know, I don't know whether I'm starting to have a conscience. I like to call it a spiritual awakening. You know, I'm learning things from my sponsor as I move through the program. One of the greatest things that he and I shared, his sponsor started moving him on step 11 a lot and started doing meditation and started doing a lot of prayers and really spending time on the 11 step prayer. And I thought, well, that's really crazy. So he comes to me and he poses this notion to me that I need to start doing the same thing. And I'm like, well, my life's pretty good right now. Why do I need to do more? You know? And he's like, I guess you've forgotten what you said about willing to go to any lengths to get, you know, get what I have. And I said, well, all right, I'll start doing it. So, and I remember the conversation because it happened right after I had gone through something in my life, and I call him and I'm just rattling off about myself and how this thing is affecting me and how my life is messed up and this person has done this bad stuff to me. And he's like, let me ask you something. He said, have you called anybody today? And I said, what the hell has that got to do with anything? You know, I'm like, well, I'm talking to you about what's going on in my life. He said, I'm hanging up on you now and you need to go call three other alcoholics because there's a problem. You have a spiritual disconnect. And I had no idea what the hell he was talking about. I had no clue. So we started spending time and, you know, we started doing step 6, 7, 8. And then I started doing, you know, 9. I started doing amends. And thank God for a sponsor, because I wanted to run right out and tell people that I was sorry, you know. And I come to find out it wasn't really about me going out there and saying I'm sorry, because I'd done that plenty of times before. This was about cleaning my side of the street. And then, like I said, step 11, I started spending a lot of time on step 11 and doing a lot of meditation and a lot of prayer, and which is way off base for me, because take a guy who, when he first got here, thought that God was mad at him. You know, now I'm starting to have a spiritual well-being. Not a godly life, you know what I mean? I'm not going to church. I did that in the beginning. When I first went through step 2 and step 3, I went to church. I went to different churches. I tried to find the answers to step 2 and 3 in my early analysis of what Alcohol Anonymous is. But in step 11, I actually spent time in prayer. And I remember calling my sponsor and saying, look, I don't really know that this is working for me. I said, do you think you're getting anything out of it? And he said, yeah, I do. And he said, but let me put it this way. He said, if you don't think step 11 is doing anything for you, he said, just stop doing it then. And I remember having this sinking feeling in my stomach, and I thought to myself, man, I don't want to take that chance. You know, I really don't want to take that chance. So even today, we spend a lot of time on step 11. And then I got to step 12, which tells me that I have to be willing to pass it on to someone else and give away what I got and then apply the principles in all my affairs. Which is very weird for me because, again, I want to do things the way that I want to do them. I want people to do what I want them to do, and I want to manipulate it, and I want to control it. If you all would just simply do what I want you to do, life would be so much easier for all of us. And, you know, I'm being tested on a regular basis these days, you know. I am not the same person that I was when I got here in 2012. It's been a long time since I've really thought about having a drink. I joke, my girlfriend is not an alcoholic. She keeps beer in our house, and I don't have a problem with that. And I joke about it now because I say I have more beer in my house now as an alcoholic than I ever did when I was drinking actively, you know, because you couldn't keep beer in the house with me, you know. If it was there, I'd drink it. So, you know, and it freaks me out with her because I know she's not an alcoholic. It actually kind of angers me. I've never seen anybody drink like she does, or at least I didn't hang out with people that drink like that. She'll drink a half a beer, set it down, or pour it out, and then go to bed, you know? And that, I just don't understand it. That's not my way of drinking, you know? I'll share this one last story with you because it really moved me. I was at Side Door in Virginia Beach about 2 weeks ago, and that meeting is a good meeting, and there's a lot of newcomers that go to it, and there was a new girl there, and usually at the beginning of the meeting, they ask for the people in the room, you know, if you're new, 30 days, they ask if you're a nursing student. There just happened to be a nursing student there that day, and so we went through the meeting, and everybody kind of shared, you know, what they were going to share, and they asked, they said, does a nursing student have anything that she wants to share? And for some reason, she did share, and for some reason, what she said really hit me, like, right on the nose with my program, because I've had up and down in my program. You know, I've had where, in my first, you know, year, my butt was on fire, and I was here every single night. You know, my life got a little bit better, and I'd veer off the path, and three meetings a week was good, and then one meeting a week was good, and my life would become chaotic again, and I'd be, you know, I'd have a hard time, and I couldn't figure out what was going on, and then I call my sponsor, and he said, well, double down, and I know exactly what that means today. You know, I double down on everything that I'm doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. But, so that night, that day, she shared, and what she said was, she said, I never understood what you all as alcoholics went through or how it was for you. And I just kind of was like, what in the world is she talking about? She said, if I have a drink, I can have one drink and leave. And I never knew that it was like that for you all. And, you know, and it just hit me for some reason that all the people in my life that tried to help me through the years never understood exactly what I was going through, you know? They didn't understand it. The only people that understood exactly what I was going through are the people that sit in this room. Even to this day, I don't share my thoughts or my questions of what I'm doing in life with the normal people in my life, you know. I don't tell my girlfriend some of the thought processes that I go through. You know, obviously she lives with me, so she probably knows that I'm half crazy anyways. But I mean, you know, when I have a thought or a process, something that goes through my head, you know, I call guys like Steve or I call Paul or some, you know, Graham or some of the guys that I'm in the program with, and I say, hey, look, let me run this by you. And I tell them, and I'm thinking, this is a really good idea, right? This is the way that I should handle this. And then they look at, they're like, okay, let me cut you off right there. Do you really think that this is a good idea? And they repeat back to me exactly what I just said. And I'm like, I said that to you? And they're like, yeah. I said, man, I'm so glad I called you and I didn't share that with somebody else. You know, that's the type of program that I have today. So back to the girl, after she shared, you know, I got the opportunity to share right after her, and I was like the last one to share at that meeting. And you know, it really broke my heart because, you know, my kids, my family, all the people in my life got to see me almost kill myself. And they never understood or could understand why I was doing that. And really, to be honest with you, I couldn't understand it either until I got here and started doing the steps and living the life and the program. You know, I never understood it either. I actually cried at that meeting, and it, like, when I shared that day. And that's the first time I've ever cried in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. That's what, almost five and a half years after I first got sober, you know, that I'm in a meeting, and just hearing that caught me off guard. I can tell you today that I'm not great. You know what I mean? I'm not good. I won't claim that, but I'm better. I believe in living my life, doing the simple actions that were asked of me from day one in this program. By the way, my sponsor made up this list for me, and it's on a piece of like graph paper, but it has a sticky back on it. That that note still sits on my mirror in my bathroom in front of my face. I've moved 3 times, and every time I move, that's the first thing that I move and the first thing that I put up, because it reminds me on a daily basis that I agreed to do all those simple actions. And without doing those simple actions on a daily basis, my life can become unmanageable still today. I rely on my higher power. I rely on Alcoholics Anonymous. I rely on the men that share their time with me and the men that I get to share my time with, to give back to them what I've learned in this program. All to make sure that I have something that I never had before, which is a spiritual well-being. I've never even known close to what that is. There's a serenity that I get to have today that I never had before. That spiritual well-being mixed with serenity trumps any day that I ever had out there drinking and drugging. And with that, you know, I'm going to thank Steve and your home group for having me. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I don't deserve. You know, going back on all the stuff that I've done, you know, it's truly a gift. And if you're new here today, I always used to hate when people would say, don't quit before the miracle happens. But, I mean, it really is the truth. You know, if you give the opportunity and you're as desperate as I was, there's people in here that'll give you the time to have the opportunity to learn what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And that's exactly what saved my life. Thank you for letting me share and coming out.